aggressive cancer feeds on glucose. It requires an anaerobic fuel because it outpaces the blood supply. It can't allow itself enough fuel to multiply aggressively if it were to burn fat. And so it is kind of an obligate glucose burner when it is multiplying fast. And just like a sprinter who is sprinting has to burn glucose because you can't supply enough oxygen. The same with cancer cells when they're, or any cells, when they're multiplying very rapidly, they require glucose because glucose can be burned without oxygen.
Well, Ron Rosedale, when somebody's under stress, whether it's from pain, whether it's from excessive use of anti-cancer drugs, or whether they're just plain worrying, does that increase the sugar levels in the body?
Exactly. The potential reasons why palliative care improved outcome in these cancer patients is precisely because it did lower glucose. But the most impressive way to lower glucose is to just not eat it. And yet, that is not part of standard medical care for cancer patients, which totally eludes me. I mean, it's very well known that the most aggressive cancers have to burn sugar, and yet they don't tell people not to eat it. And when we're talking about sugar, we're not just talking about white table sugar. We're talking about all the foods that turn into sugar. We're talking about potatoes and rice and bread and cereal, pasta. Those are the major groups. Starches will almost immediately turn to glucose, or at least within a few minutes, within the body, and they'll feed cancer cells. More importantly, they will also upregulate a very important hormone that people associate with diabetes, but that plays a critical role in everybody's lives, and that's insulin. And insulin itself is a growth factor. And so when insulin is raised, it stimulates cells to multiply. And that just stimulates cancer. So two of the best ways to reduce both the risk of cancer and to treat cancer, and there are studies that show this now, is to keep glucose levels as low as possible and insulin levels as low as possible. So not one at the expense of the other. So you don't want to take, for instance, drugs that raise insulin to lower your blood sugar. And the only way you can lower glucose and insulin at the same time is through dietary approaches. And yet that's not even on the radar in conventional therapy of cancer patients. I was wanting, for instance, in India, I spent a couple of years in India, and there was a hospital that specialized in cancer in Mumbai, Bombay, who was very interested in doing this study and had accepted the dietary approach. But they said that it could only be done in conjunction with chemotherapy because that is the standard of care. In other words, what I wanted to do is test two groups of patients, even a group of patients where they were considered very terminal. In other words, essentially had nothing to lose, and compare a dietary approach to the standard or even aggressive chemotherapy approach. They wouldn't allow that. They would only allow the dietary approach in conjunction with chemotherapy, but that would mess it up.
Is your concern that if you gave a dietary approach to slow down cancer growth and added chemotherapy, that it would be, they would be fighting each other?
Yes, I think that the adverse effect of the chemotherapy would really overwhelm some of the beneficial effects that you would see from the dietary approach. One of the major endeavors, really, to in anybody who is sick in any way, is to enhance the functioning of the immune system. And chemotherapy, in a very devastating manner, actually, impairs the function of the immune system. And it almost, I think, seals many people's death when they have cancer.
Just as it was in India, something where the ethics committees challenged you. In the United States, they would challenge you also. The survival rates without treatment for small cell lung cancer that's metastasized are 2 to 4 months on average, whereas with conventional chemotherapy radiation, the average survival rate is 6 to 12 months. In this study, they gave palliative care to people getting conventional care. That added another nearly 3 months to their lives. But nobody was denied conventional chemotherapy because of these statistics that seem to make it very evident that the conventional radiation and chemotherapy extends the life of somebody with this small cell lung cancer that's metastasized. What do you want to say about that?
There are so many studies that have been shown subsequently to be false. When there's lots of money to be made, there's lots of incentive for drug companies to skew statistics in their favor. And if I had cancer, my intake of starches and sugars would be zero. That doesn't mean you'll get your blood sugar down to zero, but you certainly don't have to give them any more than your body would otherwise make. I also would not eat excess protein. I would eat kind of a minimum amount of protein. That is a required nutrient. You have to have some or you'll die. But I would not eat excess protein. I would eat lots of fat and good fats and fish oils, and I would eat coconut oil, olive oil, nuts, avocados. I would eat the fuel that the rest of your body would be really happy to burn and the cancer cells couldn't use. Plus, you'll be keeping insulin levels low and you'll be keeping leptin levels low. And we know that low levels of both of those hormones are associated with a very low risk of cancer and an extension in lifespan. Otherwise, you'll increase maintenance and repair, enzymes and proteins. You'll enhance your immune system. Many good things will happen.
Would you also hang out with good friends and go for walks in the park and smell the flowers?
That sounds like a great idea. I most certainly would do that.